Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you. All right, John, let's finish. Coach Carl.
And it's my pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome Kim Hamer. How are you today, Kim?
Hi, Tony. I'm really good. It's good to be here.
Yeah, I'm once again, I've got a real personal connection with what we're going to talk about today, because my wife has just found herself in the very situation that you help people with. So, but before we get into that, to share with our audience the Kim Hamer story.
Sure. So my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 large B-cell lymphoma back in 2006. Yeah. He disentangled himself by 2007. And I say disentangled because I don't always like the word battle. It's like, you know, you're either battling or you're not. And sometimes cancer is not always a battle. Yeah. We were rebuilding our lives. We had 3 children at the time, and we were building our lives, and things were getting back on track. And then less than 2 years later, the cancer came back, and he died at the age of 44. Yeah. You know, my story is not particularly unique. There's many young widows out there, people who have been affected by cancer. But what happened while he was sick and after he died was people did these incredible things for us. They came up with really great ideas on how to support us. And so I started calling them acts of love, because that's what it felt like. It was like, here's a lasagna. We love you. We're going to, Art, we're going to take over your meetings. We love you. You know, we're going to give you a ride to the cancer center. We love you. And so I took that idea, and several years after he died, I wrote a book called 100 Acts of Love, A Girlfriend's Guide to Loving Your Friend Through Cancer or Loss. And it's specifically for those of us who are affected by people we love who have cancer, right? Yeah. And you know the statistic out there. It's a common statistic that 1 in 3 people are going to have cancer before they die. And I often say, what are the other 2 going to do? How are they going to help and support them?
Yeah.
So after I wrote that book, I then returned to the HR field. I'm an HR leader, an HR professional. And what I noticed, of course, was if regular people, regular adults, don't know what to say or what to do when someone has cancer, why is it that we expect our managers and our HR leaders and even the CEOs of companies to understand how to work with employees affected by cancer? And so I built a business around supporting employees, managers and coworkers who are dealing with people in their workforce who are being affected by cancer or really any other health crisis.
Yeah, it's such a worthy cause. And as I said, my wife's just found herself with a new team and in a situation where, you know, potentially she's going to need some of that support, because and I'd imagine it's a little bit of a juggling act. And I remember when I was in high school, one of my friends lost his father. And I just remember thinking at that particular time, a lot of people didn't talk to him about it, didn't acknowledge it. It's almost like they ignored it. Mm-hmm. I, on the other hand, you know, patted him on the back and said, look, I'm really sorry about you hearing about your dad. If there's anything I can do, just please reach out, you know, without really knowing what I could do. But I just felt that I needed to acknowledge how I felt about him obviously losing his father. How can people, like, I understand how you've got into the work that you do. So how do most people react, or what have you seen in general terms, if someone within the team has been diagnosed with cancer or a serious disease or something that is going to be quite scary for them to face? What sort of reactions do we generally see within work teams?
Well, I think you outlined it perfectly. A lot of times people just try to ignore it. They just kind of, and they don't do it out of viciousness or meanness. Yeah. They do it because they're terrified. They don't know how to approach that person. And the fact that you did approach your friend is so heartwarming, because so many people don't do that. And that is actually the first harm that gets done is, you know, I'm not going to talk about it. And usually the excuse is because I don't want to upset them. Yeah. Well, the thing is, the cancer is in their lives. With the loss, like, you know, your friend was thinking about his dad all the time. And so you're talking about him, about his father to him, and acknowledging it was just a way of saying, hey, I see you. Like, I really see you. The second thing that often people say and do, and I'm sorry to break this to you, Tony, but they often say, if you need anything, let me know. And the reality is that is actually the least helpful thing you can say.
Yep. And that's what I actually felt at the time. I felt like I needed to say it, but then I thought to myself, well, what is it that I could potentially do? I felt actually useless saying it.
Yes. And I think that's so, well, I think that's key. People feel useless. I mean, in the fate, when they're facing someone else's potential death, I mean, let's be honest, if they don't get treated, they will die from this disease. And so when faced with that, you know, we like to think we can do things. We take action. We like to get involved. We're going to fix it. And we can't fix a health crisis. So we say that phrase, and the reason it's not helpful is there's actually three specific things. First of all, you pointed out, what's anything? Anything is way too big, right? All those people who helped us, I had, if someone had asked me, and people did offer quite often to do anything, I couldn't think of it. I didn't think about the fact that someone could actually, like, people made my kids lunches, and all I had to do was make sandwiches. That did not even occur to me when my husband was sick.